Okay.
We're good.
We're gonna call to order this huge gathering of the Tax Reform Division. We don't have a quorum yet, so we will not act on the minutes. Today is March 3rd, 2014. And this is a hearing of the Tax Reform Division. What we're going to do is, first of all, hear from Deputy Commissioner Starr once again about the landscape of estate and gift tax in the United States. So it's a very broad brush. And then Ms. Pollack is going to review the changes to Minnesota law that were made last year, and then I will present the bill that that I have introduced to make other changes that we think will make it a better section of law for Minnesotans who have to deal with taxable gifts and taxable estates. So that's how we're going to proceed today. There are some other bills that have been introduced. At some future date, we will provide a spreadsheet that looks a little bit like the spreadsheet that we did for the chart, actually, that we did for the base broadening sales tax bills, the repealers that showed what each one is doing in each given category. So we will provide that to members at a future date. I think there's yet another bill dealing with the estate and gift tax on today's introduction. So that's how we're going to proceed. Any questions, Senator Coonan, Senator Skoy? Okay. Welcome to the committee, Deputy Commissioner Starr. Members should have in their packets this preview of the estate tax report that the department was commissioned to conduct this past year. We wanted to go ahead and have the hearing on this bill today. The report is running a little bit late, but we are going to get a preview of it, and when we get the final report, we'll make sure that members also get it in their packet. So welcome to the committee. If you'd identify yourself, please, for the record.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jenny Starr, J-E-N-N-Y-S-T-A-R-R. As some of you may know, I was an attorney at the Department of Revenue for about 7 years, working primarily in the areas of corporate franchise tax, estate, and gift tax. During this session, my role has changed slightly. My title is Senior Manager for Tax Policy, but I'm here today in my capacity as a department resource on the estate and gift tax. On slide one, you'll see that the department, as Madam Chair explained, will be releasing a report on the Minnesota estate and gift tax later this week. The report will include a history and description of the current tax, statistics on who pays the tax, descriptions of how other states have responded to federal law change, and the revenue and distributional impact of several proposals for change. Today, I'm going to focus on three topics. First, our current rate structure, then our current exemption amount, and finally, the lack of a unified system between Minnesota's estate and gift taxes as they are in current law. On slide three, I think you should start by knowing a little history about the rate structure in order to understand that our current rate system is a result of historical changes. So between 1979 and 1985, Minnesota had its own rate schedule, with rates ranging from 7 to 12%. During this time, there was a federal credit against the federal estate tax for taxes paid to Minnesota on its estate tax. Sometimes Minnesota's tax exceeded that federal credit, but it was never less than the credit. Beginning in 1985, Minnesota's estate tax was set to equal that credit, and this continued through 2001. In other words, from 1985 to 2001, the federal estate tax provided 100% credit for any Minnesota estate tax paid. Any tax paid to Minnesota reduced the federal estate tax by the same dollar amount. This was referred to as the pickup tax. Minnesota picked up a share of what would otherwise be paid to the federal government. During this time, from 1985 to 2001, Minnesota did not have its own rate table in Minnesota laws. Instead, Minnesota laws instructed estates to pay the maximum federal credit allowed for Minnesota estate tax. To do this, estates calculated two amounts from federal tables available in pre-2001 federal code and paid the lesser amount to Minnesota. Major changes were made to the federal estate tax in 2001, including a phase-out of an eventual repeal of that credit for taxes paid to a state. Minnesota, however, kept its tax calculated at the maximum federal credit allowed under pre-2001 federal code. So this means today, in 2014, estates continue to rely on the pre-2001 federal law to calculate its tax. The fourth page in your packet attempts to show the two calculations. Now, I'm not going to review all of the steps today. I'm simply offering this to show how complex the calculation of tax is. Both calculations are complex, and then estates pay the lesser of the two. The complexity is also shown on a separate handout titled the Minnesota Tax Calculator. This tool is available online from the Department of Revenue. It's an Excel spreadsheet designed to calculate Minnesota state tax. Again, estates pay the lesser of two amounts, the amounts that appear on line 18 and line 24. If we go back to the slide on page 4, one thing you can start to see here is the tax rate on the first calculation runs from 18% to 55%, and that's where the red arrow is. And the rates for the second calculation run from 0.8% to 16%. That's shown where the green arrow is. This becomes important as it explains what many refer to as Minnesota's bubble rate. If you turn to page 5, this slide shows graphically the results of the rate structure in that first calculation. You can see here that the rate is zero on the first $1 million of a taxable estate, and then the marginal rates starting at $1 million is 41%. The next slide shows graphically the result of the rate structure of the second calculation. You can see here that the rate is zero on the first $100,000 of the tax, $100,000, and then the marginal rates run from 0.8% to 16%. Now, where it gets really interesting is slide 7. This shows the intersection of the two calculations. So again, people pay the lesser of the two amounts, which means some people pay on calculation A and some people pay on calculation B. And where they intersect, that's where we see the 41% rate bubble occurring. Now keep in mind,
it's inside that triangle.
Inside that triangle. Now on slide 8, what I want to make sure you keep in mind is that I'm discussing the marginal tax rate, the tax on the last dollar of the estate subject to tax.
Excuse me, Ms. Starr. Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Ms. Starr, just so I'm clear on this now, I'm looking at this sheet that you handed out. You said we paid either line 18 or line 24. Is line 18 calculation A and line 24 calculation B, or vice versa?
My recollection is that line 18 is calculation A.
Calculation A. Okay, thank you.
And the calculations A and B refer to two rate tables in federal law. One is called Table A, and the other is called Table B.
Thank you.
Madam Chair. So on slide 8, what the study tries to show here is the difference between the marginal rate, which is the tax on the last dollar of the estate subject to tax, versus the average tax rate. So as you can see, the marginal rate has this big bubble of 41%. But the average tax rate always rises with the value of the estate. So as such, it's always higher for larger taxable estates. The average rates rise from 0% at $1 million to 3.49% at just above $1 million and tops out at about 16% at $100 million. So when you see summaries of Minnesota's estate tax that shows you rates between 0 and 16%, what you're seeing is the average tax rate as opposed to the marginal tax rate. On slide 9, I think it's important to note that having a marginal rate structure like this that includes this bubble is unique to state-level estate tax. We don't think that any other tax has such a rate bubble, and it's really the result of this historical change in the federal credit for state taxes paid. It probably wouldn't have been chosen to be this way, but for the pickup tax that was available from 1985 through 2001, when Minnesota, like almost all other states, picked up the maximum amount of that credit. Today, 14 states in the District of Columbia have an estate tax. Of these, 10 continue to have a bubble rate, and 5 have imposed their own rate structure. Of the 5 that have imposed their own rate structure, top rates range from 12% in Connecticut to 20% in the state of Washington. Some of these states maintain starting rates of 5.6% at $1 million or 7.2% at $2 million. These were the starting rates at those dollar figures under pre-2000 federal law if you ignored the 41% bubble. Some of these states, however, raised the starting rate. But despite raising the starting rate, it's important to know that tax liabilities still fell because that 41% bubble rate was eliminated.
Was what?
Eliminated. So even if you raise some of the rates, the starting rate, that doesn't necessarily mean that estates will pay more tax because of the removal of the bubble. Does that make sense? Okay. Unless there are other questions about the rate structure, I'd move on to the exclusion. Slide 10, our exclusion or exemption amount, people use those words interchangeably. Like our rate structure, you can't look at Minnesota laws and find a $1 million exclusion amount. The exclusion amount, again, is the result of referring back to pre-2001 federal law. So this is one of the concerns that the Department of Revenue hears regularly from taxpayers. It's very difficult to understand our system because it requires holding on to paper documents of pre-2001 federal law to find these numbers. Enacted in 1998, Minnesota adopted federal law that raised the exemption amount in steps from $600,000 in 1997 to $1 million in 2006 and later years. But Minnesota did not adopt the federal law changes in 2001 that further increased the federal exemption levels to $5 million adjusted for inflation. The federal increase passed into law at the same time that the federal credit for state taxes paid was phased out. On slide 11, you can see the history of the Minnesota and the federal exemption amounts depicted in the slide. So you can see how the federal exemption amount has been rising over time and how Minnesota's exemption amount has stayed at $1 million. One additional item worth noting is that this slide does not show the interaction between our $1 million exemption amount and Minnesota's deduction for qualified farm and qualified small business property. That deduction allows qualified states to deduct up to $4 million of assets from the taxable estate. While this is not an exemption, the deduction does effectively exempt up to $5 million from the taxable estates for those estates that qualify. On slide 12, what we're trying to show is that we think it's important that people keep in mind that if you raise the exemption level itself without making any changes to the rate structure, you don't get rid of the bubble. The bubble stays. It simply moves further along in those charts that show the graphs. So, for example, if you raise the exclusion amount to $2 million without making any changes to the rate structure, what happens is that the bubble rate moves from 41% to 49%, and the range impacted gets bigger. The width of the range moves from around $94,000 to $240,000. Slide 13 attempts to show other state experiences with exemption amounts. As I noted earlier, there are 14 states.
Senator Skoy, excuse me.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Ms. Starr. So on this slide with the exemption, what the point you're making there is the only way to get rid of the bubble is to disassociate with the federal government and have our own rates, or is there other ways to do that?
Madam Chair, Senator Skoy.
Ms. Starr.
Yes, the only way to get rid of the bubble is to set our own rate structure. We could adopt the federal rate structure, although I believe their current rate is 40%. So it's pretty high compared to other states. But to continue to rely on pre-2000 federal law for our rate system will always mean that we have this bubble.
So, Senator Skoy, so the bill we're going to hear in just a little while addresses that issue.
The bubble issue.
The bubble issue and does away with the bubble.
Yes.
So, okay.
So as I noted earlier, 14 states in the District of Columbia have an estate tax. Of those, 8 have an exemption amount at $1 million or less. 3 have exemption amounts at $2 million. 1 is at $2,750,000, another at $4 million. And only 2 have moved to the federal $5 million indexed for inflation. But because of the interaction between the bubble rate and the exemption amount, these statistics don't really tell the whole story, because as I mentioned earlier, only 5 states fall into a category of what the report calls reform states. Those are the states that have imposed standalone rate structures and removed the bubble. Of those 5, 3 of them have exemption amounts at $2 million. 1 has an exemption amount at $1 million. And only Hawaii raised the exemption amount to the federal level of $5 million adjusted for inflation. And as
they raised it to $5.34 million, Hawaii did. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, that's correct.
But that did not get rid of the bubble.
Madam Chair, Hawaii is a reform state, so they both moved their exemption amount and imposed independent rates.
Okay.
Right. So we have 5 states that the report has grouped by calling them reform states, meaning they have adjusted, they have gotten rid of the bubble.
By not necessarily because they took the exemption amount, but because they independently have imposed their own state rates.
Correct, Madam
Correct.
Chair.
Okay.
And of interest, of these reform states, the rate brackets range from a lowest rate of 7.2% to a highest top rate of 20%. The last thing that I'm going to briefly cover is the relationship or lack of relationship between Minnesota's current estate and gift tax. So last session, a gift tax was enacted, effective for gifts made after June 30th, 2012. The tax rate is 10% with a lifetime credit of $100,000 that can be used to offset any gift tax that would otherwise be owed. So people refer to this as the gift tax having $1 million exemption amount. But what I want you to notice is that the gift tax rate is a flat 10% rate. It didn't adopt the structure of rates otherwise imposed for estate tax purposes. And this means that the tax rate that applies to an estate might be higher or lower than the tax rate that could have applied to the taxable gift made during the donor's life. Further, because of the three-year look-back period in the estate tax for gifts made 3 years prior to a decedent's death, a taxable gift could be made at the 10% rate, and then the rate could change if the gifts are included in the estate in that three-year look-back period. There is, of course, a credit for any gift tax paid on those gifts.
Our new bill addresses that issue as well.
Madam Chair, that's correct. The federal system is a unified system, which means as people make gifts throughout their life, they pay progressively up the rate schedule, and they are using up their $1 million exclusion amount or whatever the exclusion amount is throughout their life. And then the estate continues to pay progressively on the rate schedule and uses whatever's left of the exemption amount. In that way, the two systems are unified. The only other state with both an estate and gift tax has such a unified structure, like the federal government. Minnesota's laws today do not operate as a unified system. Madam Chair, that concludes my prepared comments.
Okay, I think we'll move right to a little bit more detail about the changes in the law that we made last year, and I will note that we have achieved a quorum, so I would ask members to look at the minutes from Thursday, February 27th, 2014, if you take a minute to do that, and then I will entertain a motion to approve them.
So moved.
Senator Eaton moves approval of the minutes of Thursday, February 27th. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Ms. Pollack. And Senator Gazelka, what we've just done is had a preview of the Department of Revenue's report that's going to be coming out later this week. We wanted to hear this bill today. And we're now going to go to the more detail of the changes that were made last year, and then I'll present the bill that I have, which is 1831. We have a few other bills that are trickling in that deal with the estate and gift tax, and at some point we'll be providing, and Senator Ortman, for you too, we'll be providing a chart that compares them, like we did the base broadening sales tax items, so that people can see where things are similar and where they're different to review them. So, Ms. Pollack.
Madam Chair and members, I will just summarize the changes that were made to the Minnesota estate tax and then the new provisions for the gift tax that were enacted last year in the 2013 Omnibus Tax Bill. There were three major changes made to the estate tax. First, the amount of taxable gifts made within 3 years of death were included in the amount of the taxable estate. Second, the 2013 tax bill established situs rules for gifts so that gifts of tangible personal property were assigned to the place where the property is normally kept or located. And gifts of intangible personal property, these would be things like stocks or cash, were assigned to the domicile of the donor. Third, the bill established situs rules for non-residents who have ownership interests in pass-through entities that own real or tangible personal property in Minnesota. And, of course, pass-through entities include things like S-corps, partnerships, and certain trusts where the trust property is included in the decedent's estate. Under the tax bill, the Minnesota real and tangible personal property that was owned by a non-resident entity was included in the Minnesota taxable estate. And all of these changes were effective for decedents dying after December 31, 2012. Additionally, there were several clarifying changes that were made to the qualified small business and qualified farm property deductions for the estate tax. These changes were made effective retroactively for decedents dying after June 30 of 2011, which was the effective date of the original qualified farm and small business property exclusions. The second major change enacted last year was the introduction of a gift tax. The Minnesota gift tax incorporates the definition of taxable gift under federal law, and it also incorporated the federal exclusion amounts. So it allows gifts of $14,000 or less per recipient, qualifying gifts to political organizations, qualifying gifts of medical or educational expenses, and certain qualifying charitable gifts, and also gifts to a spouse. These are all excluded from what is considered a taxable gift. And the gift tax imposed, as Ms. Starr mentioned, was 10% on the amount of taxable gifts. And then the legislation also allowed for a $100,000 credit on gifts made during the donor's lifetime, which is equivalent to a $1 million exclusion on taxable gifts. the gift tax did not and does not apply to gifts of tangible personal property or real property with situs located outside of Minnesota. And these provisions were effective for taxable gifts made after June 30 of 2013. And Madam Chair, if you have no further questions on the summary from last year's bill, Ms. McQuay can go over the revenue estimate of those provisions that were carried.
Senator Gazelka has a question.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Pollack, for clarification, if with the laws passing last year, if somebody was a Minnesota resident and they lived in Florida, and so now they switched that, and now they became a Florida resident but still had property in Minnesota, is the only thing that's impacted for them now the property they own in Minnesota? Or I have a client in my personal life that switched. He was right at the six months. Well, now he's Florida, and I've got to believe that there's a number of that. So what does he save by doing that, because of the property still here in Minnesota? So if you could help me understand that, I'd appreciate it.
Madam Chair and Senator Gazelka, for purposes of the gift tax and the estate tax, are you asking?
Yeah.
If the person is a resident of Florida and holds property in Minnesota, that property would be subject to the Minnesota taxable estate, and it would be assigned on a pro rata basis. So you calculate the entire amount of the taxable estate and then the portion that's attributable to Minnesota.
Madam Chair, so the rest of what
Senator
he
Gazelka.
Moves out, by claiming another state, the rest of the assets are protected, basically.
Madam Chair, Senator Gazelka, that's correct. Unless the person owned interest in a pass-through entity, which entity owned property in Minnesota?
Okay.
Senator Skoy.
Thank you. And to follow along on Senator Gazelka's question, the individual could have remained a Minnesota resident but gifted every year an X amount, and would that amount be additive to the $100,000 or outside of the $100,000 total exclusion?
Madam Chair and Senator Skoy, the person could have gifted per recipient up to $14,000 per year, and in fact made taxable gifts up to $1 million because the because of the $100,000 gift tax credit that applies. So, and these would only be taxable gifts. So the first $14,000 per recipient and then the qualifying gifts for medical or educational expenses and so forth would not be included in the calculation of what is a taxable gift.
And so, sure. Madam Chair, and Ms. Pollack, just so I want to make sure that I understand this. So you give $14,000 a year to your child, and that is exempt from all taxation, and it also is not taken away from your annual $100,000 exclusion when you die.
Madam Chair and Senator Skoy, yes, that's correct.
Thank you.
Senator Ortman.
Madam Chair, the $14,000 gift accumulates, does it not, to the point where you get to the $100,000?
No. $14,000 a year, right?
Right. So, Madam Chair, after $14,000 a year, there's a lifetime exemption of up to $100,000. Is that how it works?
Yeah.
It'd be good if counsel answered that question.
Madam Chair and Senator Ortman, after the $14,000 annual exclusion, taxable gifts may be made effectively up to $1 million because there's a 10% gift tax and then $100,000 credit on that tax. So essentially $1 million in taxable gifts could be made over a donor's lifetime that would be not subject to tax.
And Madam Chair, if I could, just a couple of comments. I think it's remarkable that members of the committee are asking questions about what laws they passed last year and trying to clarify what we did last year, and especially those members that voted yes for these changes without really fully knowing what the impact was. And secondly, I think my biggest objection to this all along was that you have the possibility of double taxation, which is a terrible incentive for income. So you have the possibility and probability that there are taxpayers that have paid income taxes. They've also paid all their other taxes, property taxes, and all other sales taxes and everything else. And after $1 million exemption, now have to pay tax again on top of the income taxes they've already paid because they've happened to accumulate and saved. And I think there should be an incentive for saving, not a disincentive. And I think there should not be this terrible double taxation model in the state of Minnesota. It makes us an outlier. And it's one of the reasons why people that Paul knows, that I know, Senator Gzelka, forgive me, and other senators here and here at the Capitol know that we are creating a reason for people to leave, move their business elsewhere, move their property elsewhere. That's what the state of Minnesota has done with the tax bill that was adopted last year.
Right. Are there questions? Ms. McQuay is going to review the spreadsheet from last year. If you would do that, and then I'll present the bill.
Madam Chair and members, as Ms. Pollack stated, there were three general provisions that were passed last year. The total for all the estate and gift tax portion change was a revenue gain of $78 million for the FY14-15 biennium. That is broken up into the three proposals. The first one was both a House and Senate position to make clarifying changes to the qualified farm and small business. That total for the biennium was $23.8 million. The additional changes were House positions that the first one being the imposition of a gift tax and certain gifts included in the estate, and that was a total of $41.4 million for the biennium. And then the third change Ms. Pollack mentioned was the taxation of non-resident property held in a pass-through entity, and that generated revenue for the biennium of $12.8 million.
Thank you. Any questions about the spreadsheet or the numbers?
Senator Rist.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I bring before you Senate File 1831, and I have an author's amendment, the A1 amendment.
Senator Rist, can you give a brief description of the amendment?
It's an author's amendment, so we, if we adopt it, then we can explain it.
This is an author's amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chairman and members, this amendment deals with the treatment under the estate and gift tax laws that we're proposing to change with regard to qualified works of art, that is fine art. And we make sure that we attempt to ensure that works of art that are on loan to major museums, et cetera, in Minnesota, that there is no incentive to remove those items of art from the state of Minnesota, which otherwise would result in a a taxable event. So that's what that does, and we're adding it to the bill. As I think it's been quite clear from the discussions of both Ms. Starr and Ms. Pollack, the taxation of estates and gifts, regardless of how we think about the equity of doing that, it is a very, very complicated section of law, not only for the federal government, but also for Minnesota. And so when the changes were made to it last year, some of us immediately started working with Senate counsel and with the department to see if we could have a system that was more similar to the federal system, which is a unified system, rather than these two separate systems dealing with the same wealth, if you will, of an individual. And I think what some of the changes that were made, one of the easier ways to understand what those are is to go through the revenue estimate. So that's where I'd like to start, and then I'll come back to some other things. And you do have this in your packets, dated February 28th. First of all, the estate tax is going to be effective for estates of decedents who die after December 31st, 2013. And the gift tax is effective retroactively for gifts made after June 30th, 2013. The bill, as was explained last year, made the imposition of the gift tax effective for gifts made, taxable gifts made after June 30th. So we've gone back retroactively on that to bring it into those taxable gifts brought into the this unified system. And as Ms. Starr indicated, the current, and this is now, and Ms. Pollack, the current Minnesota estate tax uses two different tax amounts based on the two different tax rate tables that were found in that pre-2001 federal estate tax statutes that were in effect from 1985 to 2001. And so we end up in Minnesota with the minimum, again, of those two different amounts. And the difference is what is referred to as the bubble, and where you pay a much higher amount on that tiny little triangle that was in one of the charts that Ms. Starr brought up. So what this proposal does is to eliminate the bubble, and hopefully we would be considered one of the reform states then with this proposal, eliminates the bubble and sets our own independent, standalone estate tax structure. So we raise the exemption amount from $1 million to $5 million, and this is independent of the exclusion or the exemption amount that is allowed currently for some qualified businesses, agricultural businesses, et cetera, that are part of the estate, from $1 million to $5 million. And then we also have imposed an independent rate structure. The impact of that for FY15 is an $80.8 million tax reduction. One of the reasons for that amount is from last year, the exemption amount was not increased, and so that's where the money came from, the revenue came from that was in the House proposal. We're assuming, and the council and Ms. McQuay can correct me, the amount of revenue that is foregone is coming, I'm assuming it's coming mostly from raising the exemption amount from $1 million to $5 million. All of these, like in a number of tax areas, things are fairly scalable. We could set the exemption amount at $4 million or $3 million. We could have a different rate structure, but the important things are to have a independent rate, and we can, again, we went to $5 million because that is what the federal exemption or exclusion amount is. And by doing that, we also take care of and do not, if you look at the second page of the revenue estimate, we no longer have the need, by raising it to $5 million, for the small business and farm property deduction. So we repeal or eliminate that in the bill. We also, if you look now at the second paragraph there, Ms. Pollock referred to the part of the law passed last year that included a look back provision so that gifts given in anticipation of death, which is defined in the law by 3 years prior to someone dying, not that they think they're going to die in 3 years, but that is in fact what happens. We eliminate that from consideration because, we've gone to a unified approach where gifts and the bulk of the estate are treated the same. Also, and I don't remember if we mentioned this before, but there is a arrangement that's called a Q-tip, which is just short. It has nothing to do with cleaning your ears, but it is a qualified terminal. It's an acronym for a qualified terminal interest property. And we authorize that for Minnesota because right now, as I understand it, even if you want that in Minnesota, you have to file a federal estate tax return, even if you don't owe anything, but it's that, but filing that return and electing it there is what enables you to elect it in Minnesota, and we get rid of that requirement. Ms. Pollack, did I get that right?
Madam Chair, yes.
Okay. Then in the fourth paragraph there, we mentioned the what happens, when is a taxable event occur with regard to the gift tax, and that is when someone gives more than $14,000 a year, and then the 10% rate, and because we're going to a unified approach, that is eliminated. The in order to do that and to start the unified approach, as of when we put that gift tax into effect, we we're changing those rates retroactively to be the same as the proposed estate tax rates. And those are down there at the bottom. And then a lot of the bill itself is various administrative provisions that are necessary to implement a unified transfer tax. And then also, and you'll see at the back of the bill, there accompanying that are a number of provisions that need to be repealed. I also just would call your attention, I'm not going to go through it, but on the page 3 of the revenue estimate is the assumptions that were made in coming to this revenue estimate, and I would encourage you, if you have any questions about any of them, that you you ask them of the department. So I would say that there are four main things that Senate File 1831 does. It sets up a unified transfer tax system. We count both gifts and estates taxes as part of one unified system with one exclusion amount and with our exemption amount and one set of rates, which is a major change from current law. And the secondly, we increase the $1 million exemption amount under current law to $5 million. We remove that 3-year look back period for taxable gifts in anticipation of death to become part of the taxable estate, and we eliminate the bubble. So we set our own rates, we unify the system, we get rid of the bubble, and we get rid of the 3-year look back. We also have a provision for the for electing a Q-tip in Minnesota without having to file a federal estate tax return, where otherwise no return would be required. So that is the bill. And then if you would look at the bill itself now, I'm going to just list the sections that are mostly administrative in nature. And then if you want to note what the other policy changes are and have detailed questions about that, Ms. Pollack's going to help me with that. So the first section is, and sections 1 and 2, sections 3, section 4, 5 are necessary for the 2013 changes that were made. Section 6 is replacement language, and Section 7 removes obsolete language from the estate tax filing due date. Section 8 is replacement language. Section 9 is new and technical language. Section 10 is replacement language. Section 11, the same. Section 12 is technical. Section 13 is because of the 2013 bill. Section 14 is new language. We direct your attention to that. Section 15 relates to the 2013 bill. Section 16 is replacement language again because of the impact of the repealers. Section 17 is necessary because of the 2013 gift tax provisions. Section 18 the same, 19 the same. Section 20, our definitions with regard to the estate tax itself. 21 is a policy for the new language dealing with the new policy. So is 22. 23 is the Q-tip language. 24 is new language. 25 is the definitions of the gift tax. 26 is the imposition of it, and both 25 and 26 are technical and clarifying. 27 is the unified rate structure that's new under this bill. 28 is replacement language. Again, 29 is the standalone election for the Minnesota Q-tip. So that's a policy change. Section 30 is credits for the gift tax because we're making this retroactive, so there's a credit for taxes that are paid. 31 is deals with appraisal of property, and 32 is a new definition, and then there's all kinds of repealers in Section 33. So if you have the technical questions about what these mean as opposed to general policy questions of dealing with it, Ms. Pollack and Ms. Starr, I'm sure, could come back and explain how these changes would have an impact on Minnesota taxpayers. Mr. Chairman, so that's the bill.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Rest. Questions? Senator Ordman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Rest, the revenue estimates here, are they over and above the tax changes from last year? So will the state be receiving even more revenue or collecting more revenue than under the current structure?
No, it's the other way around.
Less revenue. Than the current structure.
Yeah, it's $8 million less than what has, from that year. Ms. McQuay can help. And the reason for that, Senator Ortman, I believe, is the jumping that exclusion and from $1 million to $5 million. Now, what we didn't do is use that inflation factor that the feds do, which takes the exclusion amount is increased every year, and right now for at the federal level it's 5.34. That's what Hawaii did too, but they, as she pointed out, they still remain a reform state because they enacted their own rate system, and they did not keep that really, really cumbersome rate structure that the feds have. And, you know, that is an argument to be made, I guess, that we would we should consider inflation, but it's not in this bill. We just have a flat exclusion, and for the most part, the only place where I like to see inflation taken into account is bracket creep in the income tax. I think I don't like it in the gift tax. I don't like it in the gas tax. I don't like it other places either. So it's not in this bill.
Thank you,
Senator Orban.
Mr. Chair, Senator Rest, can you talk about the independent proposed tax rates? Then, how did you come up with those numbers,
Senator Rest?
Mr. Chairman, we worked with the department. We looked at what rates were in other states. I think there's the highest rate anywhere is that 20%, and so we chopped ours off at that point too, and you know, I guess there's no magic in it, but we tried to make it easy to understand, and those are the rates we came up with. So it's not something we decided those were appropriate rates. It's not something we backed into. I mean, we didn't say, okay, let's save $80 million. How do we get there? We said what seems to be appropriate rates given this $5 million exclusion, and that we didn't want to have and the ceiling was going to be a rate that was not higher than any other states that impose an estate tax. So arbitrary in a sense, but there was some we didn't start with a number and then work our way into that.
Senator Orban.
Mr. Chair, maybe this is for someone from the Department of Revenue, but if we're changing this to take in less revenue, how much are we still taking in revenue with the law changes plus the adjustments? Does that make sense?
Yes, question. But
do you understand what I'm asking?
I don't know the answer to that, but it's going to be some different taxpayers, that's for sure. But it is, if the going forward for fiscal year 15, if the estimate was that it was going, the current law was going to raise $72 million with those changes. Our changes would be $80 million less than that, or a net return to, as I understand it at least, a net return to the taxpayers in large of $8 million. This would raise $8 million less than the other would impose because it gives $80 million of tax relief.
Mr. Chair,
am I not explaining
Senator
that well?
Mr. Chair.
Senators, go ahead.
Thank you. Senator Rest, I have those numbers out of the tax incident study.
I didn't have them with me.
Yeah, no, the
2014
total is $179 million. 2015 is $200 million. 16 is $220 million. I'm rounding. 2017 is $237 million.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Skoy, is that a combination of the gift and estate tax changes that were made in 2013? Or is that
Mr. Chair, Senator Rest, I believe it would be. This is out of the current tax incident study. So if the current tax incident study included the
both of them
2013 law changes, that would be in there.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Skoy, they don't separately state the impact of the gift tax and the
I don't know if Ms. Starr wants to come up and help us on this. I actually did have a question of the department at some point about this also.
Okay.
Ms. McClay.
Mr. Chair, and Senator Scoyan Russ, the text incidence is also tracking with the February forecast, and that includes both the estate and the gift tax. And so to help answer your question on pre-2013 changes, the estate tax was bringing in approximately $150 million a year in revenue. The changes resulting from the 2013 changes to the estate and gift tax brought in approximately $50 million more. So there was an about a 35% increase in the estate and gift tax. We're combining the two. And so let's, for example, look at fiscal year 16, because that would be the first full year of implementation that would bring the...
Of the 2013 law.
Of both. Now we're overlapping both. So the changes in that this would bring about...
2013 law and the 2013 law is what you're speaking to now. Is that correct?
Ms. McQuaid.
The proposal. Mr. Chair, I'll start over. Pre-2013 changes, we were looking at bringing in approximately $150 million a year for the estate tax. Okay, with the changes for 2013, the current revenue estimates are, as Senator Scoy mentioned, let me just take fiscal year 16, for example, is $219.6 million a year. That's roughly a 35% increase. And I'm saying roughly because there's forecast changes in there along with the changes from the legislative session. So then what your bill, Senator Russ, takes out of the revenue for the estate and the gift tax is approximately $115.8 million, and that's roughly a 53% reduction from forecast. And that would bring the estate tax, for example, for fiscal year 16 to approximately $103 million, which is lower than we were estimating before the 2013 changes. Senator Ortman, does that answer your question?
Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, if I could. So we're talking about fiscal year 2016. We're measuring just 1 year of full implementation of Senator Rest's proposal. The prior to 2013, the law would have brought in $150 million per year estimated revenues. When we added the 2013 tax changes, that would have added another $60 to $70 million in revenues. And now with the proposed adjustments, it would bring that revenue back down to $103 million in 2016. So it's less than the pre-2013 amount and significantly less than the post-2013 tax law change.
Mr. Chair, Senator Ortman, that's correct.
All right, I'm following Senator
Rest.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Ortman. I think I got it with your restatement of it. This is such an, Mr. Chairman, this is such an amazingly complicated section of the law. And when we make proposals to change the law that has barely been implemented because we think it was flawed, it makes it even harder to track what the new changes would be. But I appreciate what you just said. Ms. Starr, did you want to add anything? Or did Senator Ortman get it? You got it.
Senator Ortman.
Yeah. Mr. Chair and Senator Rest, I get it, but I have another question.
Okay.
So with the unified transfer, which is a substantive change in the way that we measure the tax liability, with that change now, will individual taxpayers still measure the $14,000 gifts at the time that they're given in each year, or only after when they pay the estate tax? You're saying that we don't measure that each year, and I'm just trying to follow. When do we measure, and when do the taxpayers pay the tax?
Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Pollack, can you take us through that?
Ms. Pollack.
That timeline, and what they do at the federal level as well with regard to taxable gifts.
Ms. Pollack.
Mr. Chair, Senator Rest and Senator Ortman, under this proposal, the $14,000 annual exclusion would not be counted as a taxable gift. Again, neither would qualifying contributions for medical expenses, educational purposes, and so forth. over and above those amounts, if a taxable gift is made during a year, a taxpayer would be required to file a return and pay the gift tax on that amount. Those amounts are accumulated throughout the donor's lifetime and counted against the $5 million exemption amount. So at the time the donor dies, that amount of gift taxes paid are subtracted from the taxable estate. So you're kind of ratcheting up to the $5 million exemption amount, and you can use it in any way that you'd like, either before before death or after death. But there's taxes are not paid twice in the gift tax and then owed after death in the estate tax.
And Mr. Chairman, Ms. Pollack, what's the federal rule?
Oh,
Ms. Pollack.
Mr. Chair and Senator Est, I'm sorry, I forgot that aspect of your question. The federal rules are the same.
Senator Artman.
Just so I understand again and help me clarify, if Mr. Johnson is a widow and he gives a gift to his son of $14,000 for 20 years, he doesn't pay the tax on that $14,000, but it accumulates, he reports it in each of those years, so that if he dies, then he pays the tax at the time that he dies?
No, I don't think so.
Over four. Well,
then maybe the Department or Ms. Pollack can explain.
Mr. Chair and Senator Ortman, that $14,000 is never counted because it's not a taxable gift. It's excluded from the definition of a taxable gift.
Correct.
It has to be more.
Each if it's given
every
each year.
Mr. Chairman, it has to be more than $14,000 to trigger a taxable event. So, again, I'm just going to repeat it because for myself. So you can give $14,000 every year to 100 people, and you have not encountered a taxable event on which you need to file a return and say, here's the tax I owe on it. It's only when you give someone $14,001 that you have a taxable event that then is going to be measured against that exclusion. My question would be, is it measured against that exclusion, is it $1 or $14,001?
Ms. Pollack.
Mr. Chair and Senator Rest, it's on the one,
it's
the first
$1
over
right.
the exclusion
It's the first
amount.
Dollar.
So, Mr. Chair, if I can give some clarification on that, too. If you're given basically $20,000, the first $14,000 not taxed every year, the next $6,000, even though it's a taxable event, you still don't have to pay taxes on it, you know, because it's building towards that deduction. So in the end, when that person passes on, all of those dollars counted, so they don't get to deduct them again. But they didn't have to pay taxes every year through.
So, Senator Scoia.
Thank you. And to follow up on what Senator Gzalka just said, so in effect, you can use your lifetime exclusion at any point in your life.
Yes.
You just don't pay the tax until you're dead and your state settles up on that.
Ms. Pollack.
Mr. Chair and Senator Gzalka, just to clarify your comment, that $6,000 over the $14,000 exclusion amount would be a taxable event. And under this proposal, the gift tax would be due on that $6,000. However, once the donor dies, that tax paid on the $6,000 is excluded from what would count towards the $5 million exemption amount.
Is that so, federal?
So Mr. Chairman, so would it be refunded if you didn't get to the $5 million exclusion?
Ms. Pollack.
Mr. Chair and Senator Rest, yes, it would count as a credit toward the estate tax.
A refundable credit.
Yes.
Is it the same?
Senator Gzalka.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, Ms. Pollack, that's how the federal works too, or you're saying just the state's going to work that way?
Ms. Pollack.
Mr. Chair and Senator Gzalka, just a moment. I believe Ms. Starr has a clarification.
Ms. Starr.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I believe my name is Jenny Starr, Senior Manager for Tax Policy at the Department of Revenue. I believe what Ms. Pollack is trying to explain is that as you make the taxable gifts during your life, you do have a taxable event, you will submit a gift tax return, but the gift tax will be zero because you will be using progressively mm-hmm. through your lifetime the exemption amount, whatever it may be.
Yep.
So you don't pay it.
So you don't pay it. Now, if you do pass your exemption amount during your lifetime and you start paying gift tax, when you die, the gift tax, the gifts will be included in your taxable estate, but the gift tax you've already paid will be a credit against the estate tax you owe.
So, Mr. Credit Chairman, so if 5 years before you die, you give $5 million gift, you file a gift tax return and put zero as the tax, but now you've used up the exclusion. And then if 4 years before you die, you give $1 million, then you're paying the tax on it as if it were part, this unified gift and estate tax, as if it were part of your estate and you had died.
Right.
Is that right?
Yeah. And the reason thank you, Mr. Chair, I apologize. The reason why people do that ahead of time, let's say you have an asset that's going to appreciate. If you gift it ahead of time, you use up your tax credit. But then as it appreciates, it's already been given away so that your heirs don't have to pay that extra.
Right.
And I do have two questions whenever.
And, Mr. Chair, maybe Ms. Starr or Ms. Pollack, so you've given the $5 million exclusion away at the age of 50. That doesn't preclude you from giving another $14,000 every year until you die.
Because that's not a taxable event.
Because that's not a taxable event.
Gazelka?
Yeah, and thank you. These are my two questions. The index for inflation, did we ever figure out what the cost would that be, Senator Rest, just so that we know? Because we have an opportunity now. It'd almost be nice to build that in.
Well, Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Gazelka, we did not include it. And there was some question whether it would create another bubble if we did. And, I mean, besides my policy inclination not to put inflation anywhere except in the income tax bracket creep stuff. And so the department only estimates what's in a bill, mm-hmm. not what's not in a bill. So I don't know the impact of inflation because I decided not to put it in the bill.
Okay.
Senator Gazelka.
And then just one other question, Mr. Chair, to Senator Rest. My concern is our proposed tax rate above the $7 million. I'm just wondering if you, Senator Rest, looked at all at leaving that at 16 flat all the way through and what the impact would be. And maybe we'll hear from some other groups. I'm just concerned that if we have a potentially a bigger small business, you know, what kind of impact that might be if we end up being on the top there. So,
again, all of these, the rates and the exemption amounts, as long as they're independent from the feds, are they're all scalable. And it at some point, we would want to make a decision, is the $5 million the correct or the appropriate, maybe not correct is not the word, exemption amount, would it and the accompanying rates. And the in a sense, it's making a decision of do we want to bring this relief in all at once, or do we have a better, are there better opportunities to enact it permanently if we did it in stages even? If we started off, and this is just off the top of my head, if we started off with $3.5 million exemption or $3 million, and then over the next several years brought that exemption up, not by inflation, but by stating it, And the same thing with the rates.
Okay.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Rest. The other thing that we should be contemplating is there are other estate management tools available to individuals. I mean, there's the trust, revocable and non-revocable. So there's other mechanisms that individuals and businesses can utilize to avoid
this. In fact, a lot of people have put all their assets into trust so that they do not have to go to probate. And as a matter of fact, that was a tool that was used has been used in the last 6 months after the passing of this, so that every asset you have is already in a trust. It doesn't change your ability to be an active manager of your trust, but everything can be in there and avoid this anyway.
And Mr. Chair, I did have a question for Ms. Starr and to the committee. This is the first time I've seen the revenue estimate, so the questions about the tax rates and all of that, you know, were hard to contemplate differences because we didn't have this document from the department. So the question, Mr. I don't know if you were involved in the development of this or not, but maybe you can go back and get me some. I have a question with regard to this table on the front page. I think the cost that we're incurring is coming from the change in the current rate to the proposed rate of from $1 million to $5 million, where we're going from a tax rate of 41% for that bubble to 11.2% for some to zero. And that cost then is $80 million in 2015, which is 40% of the total money that the forecast, I misspoke, it was from the forecast these numbers are. So the cost to do this change is 40% of the total in 15, and it's $80 million. But then by 2 years later, it goes up to $123 million. And as Ms. McQuay has said, that's 53% of the total. So it seems like a huge shift somewhere there into these lower rates that is occurring in the way the revenue estimate is calculated. And I'm curious as to what would be driving that. Would it be because they're estimating that more people above $5 million will be using some other estate planning mechanism? Or is there more revenue that's going to be in the $1 million to $5 million range? Or why is that shift occurring? Because it seems like an awfully large shift.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Scoy, I think at that point, too, maybe further detailed explanation of the assumptions, which are on the last page, that went into the estimate maybe are – I don't know if we can get all into that right now, but
no.
Maybe part of that. And it's not questioning the assumptions, but just understanding what it is that drove that that increase. But if Ms. McQuay has a comment.
Ms. McQuay.
Mr. Chair and Senator Scoy, much of the jump has to do with the fact that the bill becomes effective for decedents dying January 1 of 2014, which would put you halfway into fiscal year 15. And furthermore, you're not required to file until 9 months after the date of death. So it's not that there's a huge jump. It's just
it's
that that in the first fiscal year, you're not capturing all, which is why when I wanted to answer Senator Ortman's question, I referenced fiscal year 16, because that would be the first full year that everything goes that you would have filers filing for the full year.
Oh, thank you. That's helpful.
Mr.
Senator
Chair,
Hartman.
Following on that, then after full implementation of what this proposal would mean, assuming that it passes as is, in 2017, would the revenue to the state go up or down after the lag is accounted for?
Ms. McQuay.
Mr. Chair, Senator Ortman, there is an increase expected in there's a forecasted increase in estates, and then on so that would be one reason it would go up. Furthermore, in the assumptions there's increases The gift tax specifically, it's noted on the third bullet down, the tax bill gifts is assumed to increase by $2 million or 2% per year. So there are increases assumed throughout this estimate.
Senator, could I follow up on that, Senator?
Yeah.
Thank you. Senator Ms. McQuay, and just so I have it, the revenue that the state received prior to this change, which would be the fiscal year 2013, did I hear you say that was $150 million?
Ms. McQuay.
Mr. Chair, Senator Skoy, that's roughly the estimates that we were seeing prior to the 2013 changes. The estate tax brought in roughly $150 million. There was some fluctuations in there for the previous forecast, but it was roughly $150 million.
And, Mr. Chair, Senator Rest, the way I'm going to look at this, because there's so much changes that occurred and so much proposals here, maybe we should look at what we received in 13 and then what the proposal is once your bill would be fully implemented, which would be a modest reduction of revenue of, I'm guessing, somewhere in the $40 million range, if yours was fully implemented as proposed.
Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman, I really do appreciate the thoroughness of this discussion, but I wonder if you could ask, and I don't even know, if there's anyone who wants to testify on the bill, and maybe we could hear that testimony and then go back to our questions, if that would be okay.
Senator Rest, yeah, there are three people listed who want to testify.
Mr. Chair, just briefly on that last comment, I have a request from the Department of Revenue. I think it would help us all if we could look at all three of the different measures, what the law was in 2013, what it was with the proposed changes passed in 2013, and the proposal taken out to 10 years, so we can see what the 10-year projections look like, if possible. That would really be helpful, because we're seeing with the increases 2% per year. I mean, there are a lot of assumptions that are going to say whether the revenue to the state continues to go up or goes down over time.
Mr. Chairman, I very agreeable to that. I think maybe 10 years gets in that period, as opposed to we now have four-year planning estimates with the forecast, that's maybe more doable. The more you push it out, the more unreliable the assumptions become. So I think the four years would be definitely helpful. After that, it becomes a question mark.
Well, Mr. Chair, Central. And Senator Rest, I understand the information is not as reliable, but we are trying to create a predictable and stable tax environment.
Absolutely.
And so I think it would be helpful to us to see the trend, if nothing else.
I just give that caution about what anything other than the forecasted planning cycles are, how much helpful information that would give. But, Mr. Chairman, with your indulgence, let's hear from the testifiers.
Ms. Starr, do you have anything to add before we go to testifiers?
Mr. Chair, Senator Ortman, I'll check with our research division. I don't know what numbers we can provide, but I'll see what we can do.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. First on the list, testifiers, Ms. Cadoon. Welcome to the committee, and identify yourself for the tape, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Beth Cadoon. I represent the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, an organization of 2,300 businesses across the state of Minnesota. I first want to thank Senator Rest for authoring this bill. We definitely think this is a step in the right direction on the Minnesota estate tax. As part of our policy development, when we go throughout the state throughout the summer and fall, and this is one of the top concerns we kept hearing after the business-to-business taxes, was really the impact of the new fourth tier with that 9.85% rate, fourth highest in the nation, the enactment of the gift tax. So Minnesota is one of two states that have a gift tax, and then Minnesota's estate tax threshold still at that $1 million, but as you know, $4 million for those small business owners as well. What we heard is really those trifecta of those three taxes that's really resulting in Minnesota being a very large tax outlier and is creating a large financial incentive for individuals to relocate out of Minnesota. Kiplinger Magazine has ranked Minnesota as one of the 10 least friendly states for retirees. Forbes Magazine has listed Minnesota as one of the states in their list of where not to die. This is not good publicity for the state. We have already heard of individuals that have relocated from Minnesota. We've heard some CPAs and financial managers of a really great surge in their businesses of individual asking and business owners, how do we relocate from Minnesota? Hardest hit by these estate tax can be those family businesses and farmers. While businesses and farms may have a high value, as they know, they have a lot of illiquid assets that can make it harder to pass along the business to the next generation. Our retirees and business owners are tremendous assets and contribute greatly to their communities, our economy, and our charitable community. A study by the Connecticut Department of Revenue, Connecticut is the other state that has the gift tax, found that Connecticut was losing residents to other states and lost to the most to the states that do not have an income or state tax. The study found that 77% of respondents said the unified estate and gift tax was a partial factor for the move, and over half said it was a major factor, and this was their Department of Revenue study. Governor Cuomo of New York recently announced his proposal to increase New York's threshold. New York is one of the states that still have an estate tax at $1 million. Governor Cuomo announced his proposal to increase it to the federal threshold. Unless Minnesota acts, I think, unfortunately, we'll become more and more of a tax outlier in this area. The other thing to consider, too, is with the large demographic shift that's occurring with the, you know, first of the baby boomers that have now entered retirement years, this tax, estate and gift tax, is really creating that large financial incentive, as I mentioned, to move outside of Minnesota. And this could really impact our economic growth and financial loss of the tax base as well as those community assets. We do thank the chair for her proposal to increase that threshold to $5 million, but we recommend that we join the other 31 other states that do not have an estate tax and repeal it entirely. We also believe we should join the 49 other states that do not have a gift tax and look to repeal that tax as well. If that's not possible, we recommend conforming as much as we can to the federal estate tax threshold and indexing it to inflation. One thing to consider is the large administrative cost and complexity that's caused when we're with the enactment of the gift tax, as well as our estate tax not being at the federal level. We wonder why we create a tax where it requires and it really encourages such complicated planning in order to avoid the tax, and think it would be much better for the state as a whole to just repeal it entirely. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for the testifier? All right.
Well, Mr. Chair, just briefly, Ms. Cadoon. I mean, we didn't make any changes to the $4 million exclusion for businesses and qualifying farms, so most of the businesses weren't impacted by this because we left that in place. Now, the gift tax might have had some impact on it, but it wasn't as major for the businesses as it was for other people.
Ms. Cadoon.
Mr. Chair, Senator Skoy, I think that is true. But what happened is the federal has finally settled on their estate tax threshold of that $5 million that's been indexed to inflation. As you know, we had many years where the estate tax at the federal level was in such uncertainty of where it ultimately was going to land. So I think there was less concern from, as you look at how we related to other states and the federal, just because of the uncertainty on the estate tax. But now that that's now set, was set over a year ago by the federal government, we really think it's really time to look at this estate and gift tax, and we really thank Senator Ress for bringing this forward.
Senator Scott.
And thank you, Mr. Chair and Ms. Cadoon. But in order to get rid of the bubble, you know, we have to disassociate from the federal rates. So we just can't conform to them because we don't get rid of the bubble then, as Ms. Starr testified. So that's part of the complexity of what we're trying to deal with. And currently the small business or the qualifying business and farm exemption is a cumulative of $5 million. And I think the federal, Senator Ress, you said it was 5.34.
Okay, anything further?
Mr. Chair, just briefly, I know that this bill is probably going to pass out of here to the tax committee, according to Chair Skoy of that committee, and so I would ask our council to just
prepare.
No, it's going to be laid over here.
All right. Well, nonetheless, I would ask our council to just prepare an amendment to this bill to repeal the tax in its entirety, both the gift and the estate tax.
We hear from the. We only have a couple minutes.
Yeah, we got. Thank you, Senator Ress. That's correct. The next testifier is Mr. Cope.
Mr. Chairman, there are. I think Senator Ortman, there is at least one other bill that does that. So I think that we could get the revenue estimate for that because it's a bill introduced. I won't talk about the likelihood of it being included, but there you are.
Okay, thank you. Welcome to the committee and identify yourself for the tape.
Good morning.
We're 5 minutes before we have to
turn. Morning. My name is Todd Koch. I'm a certified public accountant and a partner at the firm John A. Knutson & Company. A couple things I hear. We have about 5 minutes till you have to adjourn here, so I'll try and make it as prompt as I can. What I really like is it's a nice stepping stone to move towards simplicity. The estate tax is one of the hardest taxes to truly comply for. Can imagine trying to do someone's estate return. It's equivalent of taking two puzzle boxes, mixing them together, and then throwing out some of the pieces and throwing away the cover, and now trying to put together the puzzle. It is very, very difficult to put together because the person who knows the answers is dead. You can't ask them anymore. So because of that, it's so complex to comply with. It's very expensive to do an estate return. It costs at least $8,000 to do an estate return. I don't care if your estate is $1.1 million or $10 million. It's going to cost at least $8,000 to put it together because of this puzzle piece complexity. There are large dollars involved. You talked about the 40% hidden bubble rate on the first $100,000. That is a big deal because many people that file the estate returns are at the lower estate dollars. So a lot of people are hidden by that rate. The other conversation I have with a lot of clients is if you have a combined estate of $3 million, $3 million estate usually doesn't do a lot of planning. So they have what I call you I love you wills, which means when the first spouse dies, it says, dear, I love you, take all the assets. When you're done using them, pass it along to the kids. That type of an estate has a $200,000 Minnesota estate tax under the current system. $200,000. With that account of money, you can move across the river to the east, the St. Croix, or the river to the west, the Red River, and save $200,000. In other words, you can buy the house next door for your children if you move across the river. And these are real conversations that people are asking me to have with them. By moving the exemption up, you are creating that situation where I don't have to worry about those types of conversations. Also, by moving the exemption up, you're also doing and making it a unified estate and gift tax. You are making it so you don't have to do some complex maneuvering because the estate tax is separate from the gift tax under current law. So if I want to use a $2 million exclusion, a $1 million estate exclusion, and a $1 million gift exclusion, I have to do a bunch of planning while I'm alive that I wouldn't normally do. I wouldn't even have to do under these bills. So we really appreciate that to get rid of some of the complexity and the unnecessary planning that's having to be done because the dollars involved are significant. The old days when people looked at total dollars, you're looking at a much lower number because you had the old-fashioned, quote-unquote, union pension plans. Defined benefit pension plan, the assets aren't in your hand. They're in your employer's hand. They just guarantee you're going to get a check every month. Things have changed now. The dollars are in your hand. You're responsible for saving your own retirement and moving forward. That is increasing people's estates. And we don't want people that have been doing the right thing, making sure they could take care of themselves and their families as they go forward, to have to really radically change things just to kind of maneuver around this tax. I like the fact that you've addressed the Q-tip issue, that it is a really big issue for blended families. Just think of it. That's really what the Q-tip addresses. I want you to think about two things quickly. is that, one, yes, there are 14 other jurisdictions that have an estate tax, but that also means there's 36 that don't. It's not nice being the outlier, especially in these cold Minnesota winters right now, where that may be also precipitating some of these other questions about changing residence. The other, one thing that's not addressed in the bill that I would kindly ask you to consider going forward is an issue called portability. Portability says, in my typical I love you situation, dear, I love you, take everything and pass it along, you get to use both spouses' exclusions. So I'm going to be my personal issue here. I am required to have all the financial assets in my name, not because I'm a controlling son of a gun. It's because my financial assets is mostly my business interest, which I am required to own. My partners are partners with me, not with my wife. It is my retirement plan, which is based upon my earnings. It must be in my name. And the other significant financial asset I have is our house, which we own jointly. So if my wife were to predecease me, everything would be in my name. She would get zero benefit of any exclusions for estate or gift, and my children would be left with just my exclusion to deal with our joint estate, where if I died first, she'd in essence get two exclusions. And that helps, that having to deal with this dual exclusion issue creates some of these unnecessary planning techniques that we're seeing. And I'm using unnecessary planning techniques. Yes, I'm a certified public accountant. I got a master's in tax. I'm a certified financial planner. But I would really like to have people just make their lives as simple as possible so they can move forward and accomplish their own goals and move along with their own lives. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Cole.
Mr. Chairman, on that issue of portability, the Q-tip election does deal with that in part, but it's not as black and white as making specific provisions for portability. We don't have that in here. I think there's one more testifier, and
yes, thank you,
your indulgence,
Mr. Cole.
We'll get
Mr.
that,
Hickey.
You know, get done with that, and Mr. Hickey will be very brief. Right?
I will, Madam Chair. Mr. Chairman, Madam Chairman, Mike Hickey, National Federation of Independent Business. We're the major small business group, as you know, have been involved in these issues for several years and pushed the bill to carve out small business and farm property. So I appreciate your guys' support on that. And anyways, just really wanted to give Senator Rest a big thank you for bringing this bill forward. This really is huge progress on this issue that we've struggled with for a really long time, I think for over 10 years now. And the increased exemption is really going to be helpful. It's going to it's really going to make the situation simpler for people. And removing the bubble is also very helpful. There's a great concern by a lot of us, though, about locking in the gift tax. And despite all the progress we're making with this bill, we are locking in a gift tax. We're going to have to be dealing with it maybe forever if we pass this bill. It's a huge improvement with the bank exemption Senator Rest is proposing. We are very concerned about the current gift tax. We think in the end, most of the people are going to pay it are going to be small businesses and farmers who can't leave yet. They're too young. They're trying to transition those businesses and farms over to their children. They want to be around to help. Maybe just too young to leave yet. But I think with our current law, which Senator Rest is really trying to address, we're going to see tremendous tax avoidance by people and tremendous flight of people out of the state who are older and have the kind of assets to run into problems with this law. And if you're already living, you know, 3-4 months in a warm climate, it's not hard to stay 2 more months. And I think we're going to see tremendous flight out of the state of older, wealthier people and tremendous avoidance. And Senator Rest's law does deal with that. I just want to urge Senator Rest and the members of the committee to take a second and a third look at trying to conform to the federal threshold and tie it to their inflation factor. I think we're going to have significant complications in the future, sort of witnessed by the discussions we had today about it. We're coming so close to conforming at the moment, and I realize that federal exemption is going to creep up I think it's going to creep up for the time being, and in the future could go up more if we run into significant inflation. But we're going to run into a lot of situations where people have a more complicated situation, have to do a smaller gift or estate tax filing because, you know, we didn't totally conform to the exemption. And right now we're real close. I realize that's going to creep up over the years, but it's going to definitely cause complication for taxpayers, increased costs in accounting, planning, attorney's fees. And so overall, we really really support this bill and appreciate it, but just wanted to make those comments and hope you take a second or third look at conforming to the federal exemption on the exemption part.
Senator Rez.
Mr. Chairman, you may lay the bill over and adjourn the committee.
Okay. Before I do that, Senator Rez, Senator Skoy, your committee meets tomorrow?
Tomorrow and Thursday. I went through the list of bills the last time we were meeting. I don't have it in front of me. We will be doing on Thursday, I know, the technical and policy bill from the department and tax court confirmations. I think we have six bills on the agenda for tomorrow.
Senator Hart.
Could you just confirm there's no hearing for either of the committees on Friday?
No hearings on Friday.
Thank
and
you.
None on Wednesday, not this week.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. The Senate file 1831 is laid over and as amended, and we're adjourned.